these things. I thought they only happened in movies with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Written by Sue Ayne and read by E.S. Rose. Once. So this is how it happens. It's Beltane, or nearly, and Arthur stalks the woods around Camelot for something to kill, because he's in a mood, and Merlin follows him, as Merlin does, with next to no subtlety. For a while, they're both pretending this isn't the two of them hiding from Lady Marguerite and her daughters. It's a nice afternoon, warm for the last days of spring, and they are enjoying themselves, which, of course, means that it's all about to go horribly wrong. What you don't do around May Day is try to kill a golden deer that seems to trail flowers in its wake. Not that killing those kind of magical creatures is generally a good idea, but with Damara on the prowl, it's kind of indulging a death wish. Or, as it turns out, something much worse. "Arthur!" Merlin yells when the crossbow comes out. "No!" In later retellings, Arthur will insist that it looks like any other deer, and that he hasn't heard a single peep out of Merlin, who will scowl and tell anyone who will listen that Arthur is an oaf, and he doesn't know why he puts up with him. Everyone else will be terribly charmed by their antics, but not believe either of them a single word. The deer does not fall over and die like it's supposed to. Instead, it charges Arthur, impales him, and throws him around like a rag doll. There is girly screaming, and then manly yelling, and the deer turns into a woman halfway through and tells Merlin that she won't take Arthur's life if he'll atone by some magical process that sounds a lot like birthing a new age. Which, yes. Okay, should have told Merlin something, but he was kind of busy trying to keep all Arthur's insides on his inside. So Merlin says, "Yes," and "Anything," and "If you don't save him, I will hunt you forever," which just sends Damara into a bout of laughter that rings through the forest long after she is gone. Kissing Arthur when he opens his eyes again seems like the right idea, and the ground is soft where they lie, so it's not really Merlin's fault what happens next. He's maybe a little frantic and breathing, "Don't ever die on me," into Arthur's skin, but he can be excused for that, and Arthur is quite enthusiastic about getting naked. They don't notice the glow of magic around them, because Merlin's eyes are clear and blue and stuck on Arthur's like they're glued together, and Merlin's cock in Arthur's ass makes them both shiver and tremble. Future. "No," Bradley says, "they can't be serious." Colin stares at the page in front of him. It's right there, but he doesn't believe it. No. For once, he has to agree with Bradley. "This is some kind of joke. I'm sure of it." But the pages look exactly like their scripts usually do. And there's more than just a few scenes. It's a whole set of episodes. And no. Except Richard and Tony are looking a little shell-shocked about it, torn between the same kind of horror that Bradley is feeling inside, and this terrible, deeply offensive amusement that's spreading through the whole production team. Katie and Angel, of course, are anything but torn. "How are you feeling, Bradley? Any pains in unexpected places?"
"You know,"
he says. I think you're just jealous, because you don't get a sex scene until Lancelot is back. It's a low blow, maybe, but he doesn't feel much like the company of vicious harpies right now. And for some insane reason, he's craving banana dipped in chocolate. Once. The feast runs smoothly, and for a while everything seems to be perfectly fine with the world. A couple of weeks pass without major magical incidents, without attacks or assassination attempts, or strange occurrences, and that might be boring and fraying Arthur's nerves a little, but it's nice to know he doesn't always have to watch his back. The problem with not watching his back is that he has time to watch his front. Merlin, he says a little distractedly, because the kitchen staff have assured him that it's a little early for strawberries. What did you do to my coat? Merlin looks at him with that expression Arthur can't quite decipher. It means either, I might be your manservant, but I'm not your personal slave, or, please talk dirty to me, and with dirty I mean dirty dishes. He shrugs, saying, I didn't do anything to it. Maybe you're getting fat. Arthur is a man, and as such, he's allowed to be prissy about his appearance, but not actually talk about it. It bothers him a little, because he's not been indulging more than usual, and his training schedule is grueling. And it's not like it feels fatty, or even less toned than normal. Maybe it's gas, he thinks, and if there is ever a good reason to go and annoy Gaius, it's this one. The man is a wizard with digestive potions. You don't have gas, says Gaius, and Arthur is beginning to get a little nervous because a voice at the back of his head tells him he already knew that. Of course, at this point, Merlin comes in and goes through his worried, puzzled, and amused expressions in a little over 10 seconds, only to settle on exasperated as he leans against the table and asks Arthur what he's done to himself this time. Arthur, ever the vindictive bastard, will remember this comment for the rest of his life. I think I have to do more tests, says Gaius. Okay, it's nice of Merlin to sit with him and joke about the clumsiest knights and their shenanigans, and maybe Arthur is getting a little worried at Gaius's increasingly frowny face of doom. He's a knight, and he's used to battle wounds and bruises, but mystery illnesses are something else altogether. And then there are a lot of significant gazes between Merlin and Gaius, and Arthur starts to be suspicious about a whole different set of problems. When Merlin pulls him aside and explains, with much flailing, that he's a sorcerer. What? This might have devolved into a moment if Gaius hadn't come in looking like the questing beast had taken a bite out of him, holding up a vial with a clear blue liquid. A clear blue liquid that apparently indicates exactly how fucked Arthur is. A lot. You're pregnant, says Gaius. What? Future. How does that even work? Bradley yells, but they've had this argument 10 times already, and everyone except him seems to think it's the most brilliant thing in the world. Julian just grins and waves his script in the air. Really, between unicorns, magic, and talking dragons, this is what gets you? He doesn't huff and say he's not doing it, maybe because Colin is having so much fun. There are moments, in between scenes, when Colin just glances over at Bradley's face and bursts into laughter. It's not the kind of laughter he gets from the costume department. Harpies, all of them, who want to dress him in more pink. And it curls something lazy and hot in his stomach. "You know," Bradley says when Colin drops a sandwich on his head, "I'm not actually a girl or pregnant." Colin smiles, bites into his own sandwich, and says, "That's okay. I love you anyway." It's a joke. Bradley is sure it's a joke. But he gets it far too late, what with the chewing and Colin's accent, and so he just stares, like that time Arthur found out about the magic. And by the time he gets around to a slightly too high-pitched fake laugh, it's all over. And maybe it's not as much of a joke as he thought. If Colin's tongue in his mouth, mustard, is any indication. Once, Merlin keeps touching him. Granted, Arthur likes the back rubs, but all these little points of contact at random times make him antsy. It's like Merlin is everywhere, and it's driving him insane. He has to do something about it. "So," Arthur says when they're alone in his chambers. Merlin blinks and sticks his tongue down Arthur's throat. When they can breathe again, all sticky and sated, Arthur says, "You know, this is probably why we're in this whole ridiculous ordeal in the first place. It's really all Merlin's fault for not keeping it in his pants." Merlin, unfortunately, doesn't think so and decides to torture him by ramping up the touches and the tension without the follow-through. By the end of the week, Arthur is so sexually frustrated, he slams Merlin against a wall where anyone could walk past and has his way with him. From the noises Merlin makes, this is not at all unwelcome. "You could have just apologized," Merlin says into Arthur's shoulder before he bites down to keep from screaming. Arthur fucks him harder. He doesn't apologize for being right. He's aware of his predicament, but mostly he ignores it in favor of hunting large animals in the forests around Camelot. It does occur to him that going back to the scene of the crime may not be the best idea he's ever had. He doesn't find anything of note there and decides never to tell anyone that he was going to beg like a despoiled princess if he'd run into any fertility goddesses. He also decides never to tell anyone that he's kind of relieved that he didn't. "I'm thinking a grain, if it's a girl," Arthur says, just to see the look on Merlin's face. He pales rather prettily, and for once no words come out of his mouth. It's a good look on Merlin. Future. After reading the latest script, Bradley stalks into Johnny's office and throws Arthur's dagger at his head. Johnny laughs and laughs and almost falls over when Bradley explains all the ways he's not going to do this. It's not so much playing a gay, pregnant Prince Arthur that has him in a huff. It's the lack of respect. The costume department is working on belly armor. "I hate you all," he says to Angel when she gives him tiny shoes made of leftover chainmail. Colin swears he'll never tell that Bradley keeps them with his other scavenged Merlin memorabilia, even if he doesn't understand the crazed, fanish mindset that would bring a person to do something like that. Bradley just glares at him and bites his ear. "We were thinking," says Julian that one time, "we could always have something terrible and magic happen to the fetus, if you really don't want to play this. It would be good drama." Bradley thinks, "When did this show turn into Torchwood? Medieval? And also, no. They are not going to. No. Just no. Once. There are battles in which he fights, despite what everyone in the castle refers to as his condition, and there are battles he avoids like the plague. One of those battles is telling his father about the... Yes, okay, about the condition. I have examined your son, and I can only come to one conclusion, says Gaius, and Uther nods along, looking kind of pale, like he already has a bit of an idea what's coming. Arthur fights the urge to hide behind Merlin, who seems to be fascinated by a fabulous wall rug behind Uther's left shoulder. It really is a very nice rug. Gaius, Uther says, it's not. And he makes several graphic gestures Arthur wishes he'd never seen. Gaius nods. I'm afraid it is, sire. This is all very cryptic, and Arthur pokes Merlin for attention. Do you think maybe we're missing something here? Merlin looks a bit like the world's been turned upside down and inside out while he wasn't looking. Arthur can sympathize. Maybe, Merlin says, wide, terrified eyes flicking to Uther and Gaius. The reason you don't have a mother is that, well, you don't have a mother. At this point, they both shudder and beat a hasty retreat, leaving the revelations and yelling to Gaius. The old man has had far too much fun since this whole thing started. He deserves to take one for the team. Future. The rap party is baby-themed. Bradley hates everyone and gets really drunk and has sex with Colin on a sofa. After that, it's back home and waiting for September. Waiting for the backlash and the ridicule and his face under snarky or smarmy newspaper headlines. Colin isn't Merlin and never gives him massages, but he is very good at distracting Bradley with blowjobs, so they actually miss the first episode of the baby arc of Doom. He torrents it for rewatching, but they're glued to the iPlayer 5 minutes later. And it's unexpected. Colin blinks after it's done. Wow. Bradley feels a little unsettled. A puzzle that's pieced together the wrong way. The thing is, it's not hilarious, even though it made him laugh, and it's not crack, even though it's completely out there. It's a comment on gender, and power, and love, and he can't believe they did all that with his reluctant performance. That was a bit brilliant, Colin says, and Bradley has to agree. He feels a little like what he thinks it must feel like to give birth. Once. They cut her out of him with magic, and it's the worst moment of his life, bleeding on a battlefield, with Merlin and Gaius yelling and frantically trying to keep him and his daughter alive. And it's the worst moment because she's tiny and quiet and not breathing. And then Merlin puts her on Arthur's chest and wraps Arthur's good arm around her and holds them both tight. And says something under his breath. And suddenly, it's all right. Hey, Arthur says when he wakes up again and sees Merlin holding Egraine, like she's his most precious possession. Hey, Merlin says, and he looks terrified and worn, and there's still blood in his hair. But Arthur smiles anyway. Because they're both kind of beautiful. The end.